My name is Ilan Haimov, partner and head of the Profit Participation Services at GHJ, and I wanted to welcome you back to our GHJ's Entertainment Videocast series. In this episode, we will feature three of my colleagues, which include my partner, Steve Seals, as well as Peter Klotz, who is a principal, and Tracy Liang, a manager at our firm. All three were involved with the third edition of the movie Money Book and are here to share their insights and trends in the current film and television industry. I'd like to welcome you all. And we will start our discussion with Peter, who authored a chapter that focused on new media. Peter, as COVID kept us at home for over a year now, what key changes do you see with new media? And what impact could this have into the foreseeable future that you can see?
Thank you, Ilan. I see two key changes and trends. One of them is really ad growth in ad-based video on demand and subscription video on demand offerings. Almost every major studio has its own streaming platform in addition to the existing streaming giants such as Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon. So the demand for content continues to increase. License fees and sales of the so-called evergreen and or premium library titles will increase from this expansion of direct-to-consumer platforms, especially for episodic TV series, which should see the most benefit as the streamers are keen to license these long-running series to maximize viewer engagement. I would like to mention that ad-based video on demand, which is something like YouTube, where you pay with your time, is one to watch as consumers will reach peak tolerance level in acquiring paid subscriptions at some point and maybe acquiring more of these free ad-based services. The other one I wanted to mention, the other trend, is the premium video on demand or early access for home viewing of recently released theatrical releases. So with theaters not at full capacity and the reduction of the exclusive theatrical window, we will see a continued expansion of PVOD, especially for smaller budget films. Last year, more than 20% of American households has actually purchased an early access film. And the price point is usually around $20, which is far less expensive for a family than a trip to the theater. So I see those as the two biggest trends in the next couple of years to come.
Thank you, Peter, for sharing your insights. Now we'll move to Tracy, who authored a chapter that focused on the China entertainment business. So with that, Tracy, with China recovering obviously from COVID much sooner than many other nations around the world, where does the movie business stand right now? And is it changing as compared to how it was before COVID came?
Yeah, so in China, the movie production kind of resumed in March last year. But I think by now it's very active. There's a lot of productions going on. And in the theater business, unfortunately, there are many smaller theaters that went bankrupt last year. So the industry right now is more concentrated with big players. So the theaters in China reopened in the second half of 2020, and it started out with like a 25% capacity limit. Then the limit was increased to 75% beginning September last year. And recently, the government just lifted the capacity limit for entertainment venues. But it seems like a lot of the theaters still apply the 75% limit just to be on the safe side. And in terms of movie going, the trend is that a lot more people wanted to see the movie during the holidays compared to similar holidays in 2019. But in the non-holiday period, the movie going is still below the pre-pandemic levels. So in this past Chinese New Year holiday in February, the tickets were sold out very quickly in certain locations, and the theaters had to introduce surge pricing And this pricing strategy will likely be applied going forward for peak movie going periods. So the last thing I wanted to touch on the movie releases in China, because there's a long delay of many of Hollywood blockbusters. So it gives more opportunities for Chinese local content to perform. Additionally, re-releasing old movies is another strategy to get the audiences back to the theater. And there were dozens of re-releases, including both Chinese and Hollywood titles. And a great example is Avatar's recent re-release, and it made over $54 million in China's box office. And this helped Avatar to become once again the highest grossing film of all time. Overall, the China movie business is having a robust rebound, and I'm very excited to see how things will develop in the rest of this year.
Thank you, Tracy. To close, what I wanted to do, I wanted to shift to Steve, who, by the way, was involved with all three editions of this book. This is the third edition. This goes back quite some time. And going back to the industry, as we look at the industry right now, it appears that there's more consolidation, at least in the last couple of years. And wanted to get what key trends do you see, Steve, with respect to related party transactions? Sometimes referred to as vertical integration, especially considering the continued consolidation in the film and television industry, coupled with increased competition, especially in the area of streaming in this past year, the past actually even months. What impact could those trends have in the coming year?
Thanks, Iman. Every major studio, with the exception of Sony Pictures, now has their own streaming service. Disney, which now owns Fox, and they have Disney Plus and Hulu. Warner Brothers owns HBO Max, Universal has Peacock, and Paramount has Paramount Plus, which also includes CBS All Access. It's very likely that these studios will license their own motion pictures and television output exclusively to their own streaming services to maintain control of the product and to control costs. In addition to streaming, each studio has its own home video company, and many own network and pay television outlets like ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox Broadcasting, Home Box Office, and Showtime. With the exception of theatrical distribution, they control virtually all major exploitation areas of the motion picture and television business. From the perspective of a third-party profit participant, those people that we normally represent, this raises great concerns, such as whether the license fees are at fair market value. Without competition, it's very easy for majors to undervalue their own properties when they sell to themselves. It's important for transactional attorneys to negotiate language that allows their clients to question whether a fair market price has been paid when a company licenses its own product to its own subsidiaries, and provide for the ability to compare those prices to arm's length transactions in the same media. I can see this being one of the major areas of concern during our audits of the studios, and if they do undervalue these sales, there's certainly going to be an uptick in litigation so that the participant has the opportunity to achieve a fair share of the profits from distribution. Now, one other area of great concern when negotiating profit participation is revenue classification. Many studios are classifying VOD, transactional video on demand, SVOD, subscription or streaming video on demand, AVOD or advertising video on demand, and EST or electronic sell-through as home entertainment revenue. Sell-through and all of these other forms are subjected to a royalty, which is usually 20%, as these sources are replacing traditional television revenues, which were always reported at 100%, the studio is reducing revenue from this exploitation by 80% to the participant. So it behooves participant representatives to be aware of this practice, do everything they can to ensure that their clients get a fair share of the distribution proceeds, but putting appropriate language in the agreements.
Thank you, Steve. And again, thank you, Peter and Tracy, for participating on the videocast. And most importantly, thank you all for taking the time to join us for this videocast.